on the press release, you have this really cool origin of the new album, how it all came about. Can you just share that with us?
Well, we got a new guitar player, Kerry Kelly. He came out of the blue. Our original guitar player moved to Chicago, and we were without anybody, with gigs coming up. And Kerry came to a friend of ours. He just showed up, and we ran him at a rehearsal, kind of audition, and he just fit the bill. He was great. We didn't really have a rehearsal so much as just plugged in and played in somebody's living room. We still haven't had a rehearsal, and it's been in the band for 8 months. We don't rehearse. We just have sound checks. But everything seemed to shift gear. Everybody was playing harder and better. And bit by bit, he found his way into the club. It's very, very difficult being a three-piece band, you know. You have to hold it down big time. The singer has to really be on his game. And that's just the singer. You know, there's three other guys that have to make it sound meaningful. You can't fall back on keyboards. There's no synthesizers. There's nothing trite about it. We're just playing like an old 70s rock group, which is kind of my favorite period. And we wanted to capture that. And we had a record out 2 years ago called Rough Ensemble. The single went number one on classic rock radio, which really surprised us. But I thought it would be great to make a live album of the energy that we have now, just to give to the fans. There was no, and there is no plan to, you know, treat it like an epic. It's just it's a document of what we sound like. It isn't loaded with hits. It's just loaded with the songs I like the best that we played. We have a song on it called If You Ever Get Lonely, which was on the last album, which we're going to radio with as a single. And we're re-releasing the original too. And a band down in Nashville called Love and Theft have released it as a single. They had a number one hit last year. And they're very popular. So it's possible, just possible, that they could go number one again. And if they did with that song, it would be interesting because then we'd have a hit in country music and possibly a hit in the rock market. So, you know, it's an interesting period. I have no idea what's about to happen next.
Speaking of which, do you feel rejuvenated at all? Just reading the press release and hearing like the way you were speaking about how you guys want to produce something every 8 months and how you have the tour on the way.
Yeah, I do. I feel that there was so much more that we could have put on that record, but it felt right to keep it at that length. There's only 8 songs plus a very long guitar solo intro by Kerry, but the running time of the album is the average running time of any album. But I love the fact that it was like those, again, 70s live albums that didn't load up on just numbers of songs. It was about quality. And bands tend to stretch out when they're playing live, and we do. But I should think in 8 months' time, this band's going to be white hot. We're pretty good now. I mean, I don't know. We have gigs, and I just like turn around and look at them. I never expected to be here at this point, and I wouldn't be going out on the road if it wasn't as good as it is. I mean, it's compelling, you know. That's what I do. If I had one last day on earth, I hoped I was playing with the band that night.
Considering, you know, this upcoming tour, and what you just said, that you wouldn't be going on tour if, you know, things weren't the way they were. How do you want this tour to be different from the other tours you've gone on in your career?
Well, I've done a lot of touring. I'd like to. A couple of years ago, when we were going after Rough and Tumble, we played very small places. We played small clubs and packed them out. It was purposeful to do that, so we could get into every town possible, to get on the radio on certain morning shows and be interviewed, and they would have the record. And that's how we got a number one record. A couple of weeks ago, we did a gig with Styx. Ricky Phillips, the old bass player from The Babies and Bad English, he's in Styx and stuff. It was great to see him. But But the band walked out in front of like 6,000, 8,000, 7,000 people, blew the place up. And I realized how much I missed playing bigger stages and how the music translates to that, that we're good at that. And that the clubs are great for different things. But I've outgrown that, I think. It's always fun to throw a club in. But the music, it's too big for that. You need good monitors and you need the right amps played very loud. And you need to be doing that on a big stage. And I think it works. And especially since the last album. So I'm concentrating on just playing bigger places. Maybe we won't play as many gigs, but I want to, it's like having a sports car and putting the right gas in the tank, you know? It's down to that. It really is down to that.
What else do you really want to accomplish in music? I mean, you've got a number one hit on Billboard as a singles artist. You've got a number one hit on Billboard, you know, while in a band. I mean, what else is there that you really want to do?
Well, I wanted to well, I did actually do it. I mean, there's an album called When You Were Mine that I made in the 90s. It's still my favorite record. It's almost, it's not country, it's not folk, but it's a lot of acoustic guitar. And it followed the album Temple Bar. And I still listen to it and wonder how I did it. I was writing songs the night before, bringing them in and showing the band. And I was producing as well. So I was kind of making the tea, singing, organizing, arranging, paying the bills, and renting the gear and all that. But that record moved me. And I always said after making that record, I didn't know where to go. It was the best I've ever been. And it was before country really took off, and I was interested, very interested, in the Ryman Auditorium and the history of Nashville. And, of course, Hank Williams, you know. I mean, he's like, I mean, between him and Johnny Cash and Willie Nelson and Merle Haggard, you have the royalty of country music, you know. I mean, and these guys are lyricists. These guys are not, this isn't throwaway music, this isn't pop. This is something that's almost religious, you know.
Mm-hmm.
There's God in there somewhere. As much as the sex, there's God in there. And that moves me. And I was looking at that as inspirational, not trying to mimic anything country. But I have nothing but real reverence for that kind of writing and those kind of people. That you only get one of those every million people. In rock and roll, you get a lot of people. You get a lot of people that can play, and they play big raging guitar solos, thank you and good night, you know?
Mm-hmm.
But there's something more in music. There's just, it's like Bob Dylan. If you sit down with Blood on the Tracks, you might not get out of your seat for 24 hours. You know,
yes.
There's something there. Music has it or it doesn't.
You mentioned really good writing, how it affects you. What is your writing process like? How do you sit down and write a song?
Well, no, I try to avoid writing as much as I possibly can. It happens very instinctually for me. I sit down, I play a chord, and I sing a melody, and I have a song. And then you have to write it down and organize it. And the other day I was in, on my birthday, I was in the English pub down the road, and I hit the button on my iPhone that records voicemail, you know, kind of voice messages.
Mm-hmm.
And I'd written a song on a guitar last year, and I'd forgotten about it completely. And I listened to this thing on my birthday, and it was really good, you know, it was strong. And yet it was sitting in my phone for a year, unnoticed. I try to avoid it as much as I can, because when you go to it, you know, it's very revealing, and you have to look at yourself in the mirror, and you have to tell the truth if it's worth anything, you know. and it's kind of heartbreaking in some songs, and it's full of joy in the other. It's full of life, you know. But it's a ride, you know. It isn't easy. It's not simple. And if it's any good, it's not comfortable. Art shouldn't be easy. Art's meant to rock your world. It is. Art is not meant to be a pastime. It's meant to open the door and show you something that you've never seen. And it happens a lot. You know, people make great art all the time. Unfortunately, it's a business. And so there's equal amounts of stuff that isn't important. It's ephemeral.
There's one song in particular that's been covered, you know, 7 or 8 times that you've written. It's appeared in TV shows, video games, Missing You. How did that melody, how did the lyrics, how did all of that just come to you?
I don't know. I was at a friend's house finishing up a song. We were looking for the backing track on a 1-inch tape machine. And he stopped the tape at the wrong moment. And he had an 8-note piece of music that he'd been working on with a friend of his. And I said, give me a shot at that. Put that on the mic. And he had a spare room, like his bedroom, with a mic set up. And we put the mic up. And he rolled it, and I listened to it. And then he rolled it, and I sang along to it. And the whole first verse, B section, chorus, and about, I would say, 2/3 the second verse, and then the B section, chorus, all came out in one piece. I even used the baby's title song, Every Time I Think of You, just to get me started. And once it started, I couldn't stop it. And when it hit, you know, there's a storm that's raging through my frozen heart tonight. I ain't missing you at all. Jesus Christ. I mean, that's what I felt. And it's like, that's what I'm talking about, songwriting. There's that kind of songwriting. I didn't even know I was going to sing I Ain't Missing You at All since you've been gone. I don't even know where that came from. And, you know, and I knew immediately how good it was. And I knew that I'd finally, that I'd been waiting for this thing. I'd made a record. It was the last thing to go on the record. Everybody thought the record was finished but me. I knew there was one more song. And I had to fight with the record companies to get on the record. But that's the kind of songwriting, and that's the kind of commitment, and that's what it is to be an artist. And sometimes you just beat your head against the wall or go out and get drunk because you just can't articulate the stuff. But when you can and it comes out, everybody else gets it. You know, that's the whole point. It's like trying to share something that enlightens yourself and maybe somebody else at the same time. That's what music is. And it's also something you can dance to.
When you write a song like that, that everyone loves and that is on the radio nonstop for a really long time and kind of almost defines you in a way or for a certain amount of time, do you grow to hate that song?
No. I lose myself in the songs. There's songs that, you know, there's a song on the album called Possession. And every time I sang that song, I'd think of a girl that I knew standing outside the Dakota on 72nd Street at Central Park West with her hair blowing back. And I think of that girl when I was singing that song. I could be in front of 20,000 people. And all that exists is me and that girl. And so how could you look at it like anything other than some transcendent experiences? It's illuminated. It's a beautiful thing.
You told us before about, your love of country, and that's something that maybe some casual fans of yours might not have, you know, expected.
I mean, on the No Breaks album that had Missing You, there's a full-on country song called Restless Heart. And I wrote that for the Babies, and the Babies just laughed at me. But it's full-on country. It's got slide guitar in it and everything. I mean, I was aware of Hank Williams when I was about 7 years old. I still think, Hank Williams. I mean, he sort of borrowed from other people. He bought people's songs. and he wrote them himself. Sometimes with Roy Acuff, sometimes in a lonely motel room. But Jesus Christ, he's brilliant, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah, I still think about that. Move it on over. You know, it's a tongue-in-cheek song about being kicked out.
Mm-hmm.
But it's absolutely beautiful, you know? Anyway, I mean, I can't help it if I'm still in love with you. I mean, you know, wow. These are songs from the early 50s. You know, he died, I think, before he was 30. I think he was 29 when he died. You know, that's bigger than Elvis to me.
Yeah, I mean, let's be fair here. I mean, Elvis had another, what, close to 20 years after that.
Oh, yeah.
You know? So,
yeah.
Much bigger catalog. What I was trying to say before is, you know, you discussed your love of country. Are there other genres that you're really fond of or artists that people wouldn't assume that you appreciate
that they
would know?
Bluegrass. I love bluegrass. There's a guy called Larry Sparks who I know personally. Me and Allison used to go and see him play and went to his house once. But Larry Sparks is the guitar player. He is the guitar player, second to none, on the acoustic guitar. He plays like Elvis's old guitar player. He rocks it up. He is unstoppable. Just the best. I like Bill Evans, the keyboard player, the jazz keyboard player from the, he's dead now. But I listen to Bill Evans for choice, you know, I listen to that. Just get up and play Bill Evans, because it's so beautiful. I like Eric Satie, the French composer, his Gymnopédie 1-3, that's beautiful. But you see, I'm referring to classical music here. and I'm referring to bluegrass. And I'm the biggest fan of African-American music in the world. I mean, it's not about shape, size, color, or what your heritage is. It's about the soul of it, you know? And it happens 100 years ago, and it will happen 100 years from now. But there's a few people that have it, and if you watch them, you'll experience it, and your life's bigger because of it. You know, you're not alone.
I interviewed fellow, you know, Babies member Ricky Phillips a couple of years ago, and I asked him a question along the lines of, if his first piano teacher could see him now, what would she say to him? So I'll ask you, like, someone from your childhood that, you know, maybe might not be around anymore or never thought you would be a musician, what do you think that they would say to you now that you've done what you've done?
Get off the piano. I have no idea. I'm just serious. I don't know. I mean, you know, I just don't know. They almost kicked me out of school because I wasn't any good at anything. You know? So I was the biggest surprise to them that I turned out to be successful. All those kids out there that don't fit in academically doesn't mean that you're not going to change the world. It means you're different. You know? And without people who are different, what are we?
It's true. As far as this album that was just released, how do you want it to ultimately be remembered, you know, a couple of years from now? What do you want people to
the
say
album,
about it?
The album?
Yeah.
It's a very honest statement that wasn't chasing the charts, that it's the mark of a lifetime of experience played like you were 17.
Very nice.
And I really mean that. It sounds like that to me. I'm singing better than I've ever sung before. So I'm kind of like just basking in that, you know. It's the weirdest thing to become older and be better than you were when you were younger. It's usually the other way around.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know how long it's going to last. But man, I'm having a ball. It's fun.
So how do you think that happened? How do you think you've...
I have no idea. I smoked most of my life. I drank. I've just come from very strong stock. And, you know, I mean it. I think... I said the other day in an interview, my voice is like a hoarse whisper. I hope it will still be believable and that the songs that I'm singing will be as real to people. After saying all that about being better than I've been before, it's not about hitting high notes. It's not about trying to sort of impress people. You walk out there and there's some connection between you and the audience, and if you're honest, it works. He said there's a picture of Bob Dylan somewhere, and there's a spotlight about 200 feet above his head, shining down on him. And he stood there with an acoustic guitar, and it's like the Royal Albert Hall or something, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And it's just, and that's it. I don't know what it means, but I can't even describe it. If I could describe it, I'd probably stop doing it. Really, I have no idea how I do what I do. I know it sounds naive, but if I knew, I'd probably go, oh, and, you know, do something else.
Do you think there's anything that's happened in your life over the past couple of years that's kind of helped you get to that place?
Life itself. The older you get, you should know more. Very, very hard to describe what wisdom is, but it's great. You know? Anybody that says they're wise is usually a complete fucking idiot. So that's a great note to leave, I think.